Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Today's episode is brought to you by one of my all-time favorite apps, Blinkist. I found out about this app when I was pregnant and didn't have as much time to read, particularly into those early years of mothering, and it has been a game changer. Blinkist brings you knowledge from top nonfiction and podcasts so you can learn anytime, anywhere, and the best part is it condenses it down into 15 minutes. You can either listen or read to key ideas from best-selling nonfiction in just 15 minutes. So you keep getting all of these great recommendations, all the parenting books, all the health books, all of the things that you know you should be doing and know that you should know more about, but you just don't have the time to read the full version. You can get the Cliff Notes version from Blinkist. They have teamed up with podcast creators to bring you key insights from podcasts as well. And there is expert curation, their handpicked recommendation tailored to what you're interested in. So the more you listen, the more specific your recommendations get. Visit healinggroundmovement.com/resources for a free trial of Blinkist. I know you're going to love it as much as I do. Enjoy today's episode. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and we have a phenomenal guest with us today, Mike Riccio. He is the owner of MAR Health and Performance in Downers Grove, Illinois, and his facility provides private and small group training for both adults and athletes from fifth grade through professional. He runs a virtual program that focuses on lifestyle health and hosts a podcast with the same focus. So I'm always so excited when I get to meet another individual, another podcaster who is just a little obsessed with this idea of health and wellness and where we can bring that into our daily life and understanding that it goes further than just making sure you have the right protocols you pulled off of the internet. There's a lot more about how you look at your health and own your own process. So Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
And Mike, so you and I got to talk a little bit a couple of weeks ago about what got you started on this whole journey and experience. But you share that with our listeners a little bit now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really enjoyed our first conversation and really excited for today. So as you stated, I'm a gym owner, I'm a podcast host. And really my motivation for both came in 2013. So my dad was diagnosed and eventually passed of a stage 4 glioblastoma, a brain tumor. And the experience was, besides the obvious life-altering change that it would be, it was a huge change for my career as well. When he first got diagnosed, I really put a lot of time into trying to help him. Was there something that could be done? Were there lifestyle changes? Were, you know, some actionable step? You know, me being maybe a slight control freak, you know, I don't like when things are completely out of my control.
Yeah.
So I did. I put a lot of time into it. And, you know, in the end, he had a very aggressive cancer and there was minimal that was really going to change it at that point. But in the act of doing as much research as I did, I really learned a lot about the connection between the lifestyle habits he had, the ones that may have led into his diagnosis, may or may not. I mean, that could be arguable. But as I said on the phone call with you, I'd be hard-pressed to be convinced that some of his lifestyle habits didn't absolutely contribute to his diagnosis. And then also the connection between disease prevention and the rest of our goals that most of us already have. You know, I call it the recipe. A lot of the things we do are the same things we need to do to increase energy, to lose weight, to increase strength, to increase cardiovascular health, to be in a better mood every day. And I think this is great because when you look at it that way, it kind of simplifies the task list we might have to do every day to really just see complete health, but also see results.
That's fantastic. And I really love that you dive right to the heart of what I think is a really big issue in all of our lives, well, many of our lives, I'll throw myself in this bucket, is that we think all of our goals need to be separate. We think that,
you know, I have to work on my relationships over here. My work is over there. Even within our own bodies, within our own beings, you know, I'm going to hit the gym over there, but my food is separate from that. And then my mental, emotional health has nothing to do with any of these other things. We have created this huge schism within ourselves with, you know, 25-point to-do lists for every single category of happiness we could have within our lives. That sounds beyond exhausting. It is beyond exhausting.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And what a pressure relief it can be when you finally make peace with the fact that it can be a little more simplistic. And this isn't to say that we shouldn't put focus into the things that we want and that balance may not look balanced. You know, that those things, those aren't always the way we think they are in our brain when we visualize what balance means. But yeah, it certainly can take a lot of pressure off when you realize I can get a lot of birds with one stone, you know, for lack of a better phrase to use there.
Well, and when it comes down to it, I know one of the things that you like to talk about with your clients is creating motivation around self-care when we don't have current signs, symptoms, or personal relationships to health issues. And, you know, there's a little bit of nuance in here that I'm hoping that you're going to tease apart for us, where when we talk about the rest of our goals and how that turns into, that turns into disease prevention, you know, we don't have to have a catastrophic diagnosis. We don't have to be at the brink of our health falling apart. We certainly have other goals that we could be focusing on the well-being of ourselves in favor of these things that are a little bit more on that front burner and see more of a turnaround than we would expect.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and let me state up front that this is difficult. It is. You know, I've called what I went through my metaphorical punch in the face. You know, when my dad got sick and eventually passed, that was an awakening. And the truth is, it is difficult without some type of increased motivation to create a passion in someone to want to make change, because change is difficult and it is hard. So, you know, as we talk through this, there is definitely no ease of this, or I don't mean to make light of a situation by saying, oh, well, just because now you know, it should be easier to just make change. You know, it is, change is difficult. But the truth of the matter is, if you look at the statistics, most diseases start before symptoms arise. And I point to dementia first, as that is one that runs rampant in my family. It isn't totally unrelated to my dad's brain tumor diagnosis. So I've done a lot with the brain in terms of where neurological diseases start. And dementia itself has a shelf life of about 20 years. About 20 years prior to symptoms, people may be experiencing other physiological but non-symptomatic signs. You know, something that may not come up unless you have a different symptom for something else. And then while doing a head scan, say, oh, I start to see this, I start to see that. Brain folds are something that specifically neurosurgeons will look for diagnosis. But, you know, when you think of it that way, it may be a little scary at first for some people. But also eye-opening that by the time you get any type of punch in the face, whether it be a major event or even a lighter sign or symptom, it's not that it's too late, but you do have to recognize you are probably further along in the spectrum than you think you might be.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's hard to find that middle line, because of course there are no guarantees in life. That is the other lesson of the punch in the face, is that we can do everything right and still life is hard. Still things are challenging. Still things come up. You know, as you talk about your dad's glioblastoma, some of it, his lifestyle choices may have increased the symptoms earlier, may have made it more aggressive, but he still had, you know, that predisposition to have that growing there. So it's finding those incremental steps in the moment, in the present, so that we can stay focused with that passionate goal on health and well-being, while also not living in fear of all the what ifs. You know, I eat one burger and it's all out the window. Where do we find that? I mean, I know that's just kind of like the biggest wish we have is without the punch in the face. How can we start to gather this plan for ourselves?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the number one key is always education, right? Your listeners come here and there, and they're going to at least listen to this, which will take them to the next level. So the key first is more people like you and I, hopefully, that are just spreading information. The healthcare system is a great system, but the truth is you don't go to the healthcare system until you are sick, which makes it somewhat of a non-healthcare system. It's more of a sick care system. It's there for a reason, but we also have to give it credit of what its purpose is. So once you have the education, I think the key is that link. You know, we opened up this podcast talking about how the same recipe is the same thing, same advice I would give you if you said, I want to lose weight, or I want to get stronger, or my energy is just garbage. Well, great. Well, what are you eating? How much are you recovering? How much are you sleeping? What is your lifestyle like? The questions don't change. They're the same questions. So when you can link something that's already important to you, I already really want to lose weight. I already really want to do something else. And I say, great. Well, guess what? If you focus on these goals, not only will you get that, but you can also look at longevity as part of that equation. Mm-hmm. The format switches. Instead of putting the aesthetic goal on the pedestal with, and maybe I'll get this, this, and this, the habits become the pedestal with all of these amazing benefits that now come underneath that umbrella. Mm-hmm. So it opens up the door to so many more things. And what I found too with my clientele is it actually also strengthens the results of the aesthetic. Because now it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, I kind of wanted to lose weight because it would be cool to lose weight. But I have trouble doing it. Oh, wait a minute. I can also maybe not only live longer, but live better, have a better chance to be a better parent, see my grandkids grow up. Well, now the combination of those possibilities make it like, you know what? Today, I'm a little more motivated to maybe make a couple better health decisions that I normally wouldn't make.
I really, really love this this frame shift that you've created here about putting the habits on the pedestal and taking the symptom off. I think that is where we get into so many of these yo-yo loops. I mean, yo-yo dieting is definitely a term we all know, but there are so many places of self-improvement where we do have that yo-yo effect, where we think that we want to be stronger, or even if we're going into relationship building, that we want to be a more present parent. And we make that the goal. And when we achieve the goal, there's a part of our brain that is ready to go, great, what's next? And set it aside. We can check that off of our list. And then even if it's something like, you know, being a more present parent, we've done it for a week. Now the phone starts slowly creeping back in because the focus of your brain was never on the habit, was never on the thing that you wanted to sustain, but the thing that you wanted to change. Can you talk a little bit more about why this apparently very simple, but oh, duh, flash of lightning is so very, very important?
Yeah. And you said it perfectly about the results being on the pedestal and what it means when you're done with the results. It also means the truth in the opposite direction, where if we don't achieve the results and that was the only pedestal, well, now there's no reason to stick with the habit because that was mm-hmm. the top of your priority list. If the habit's the top of your priority list, no matter what, even results vary, you still go back to your baseline. What is my mm-hmm. daily checklist? Because there is no scenario in the world where completely going off the rails on your health habits becomes beneficial. It doesn't. Yeah. And if you know, and let's use the scale because it's the most popular one, but if the scale is the most used and the only used, I should say, numerical number for results, then when that doesn't cooperate, you're going to keep bouncing around to other things. Mm-hmm. When health habits are the focus, we at least stay within the same box. Where, okay, maybe I'll try different tactics, but they still have to align with the health habits. And then I'm okay with some variance. I'm okay with some playing. And then we can mm-hmm. actually get into what real balance, quote unquote, looks like with, you know, things like the 80-20 rule and eating healthy versus indulgences and timing active versus recovery time. And we can start looking at those things, but we look at them better when they fall under the realm of the healthy habits versus mm-hmm. when they only come in connection with an aesthetic goal.
I love that. And especially as we're talking about, you know, the body positive movement and, you know, health at every size. And there is definitely a place where, again, there's nuance within that statement. It's not about that you have unhealthy habits at every size, but that if you work on your health and you work on your habits, whatever size that you want to arrive at is the right size for you. And I like this idea of if we only use the scale, if we only use the number as the scale, you can, well, I'll use myself as an example of that. When I start working out, I put on muscle weight really fast. It's just how the people in my family go. It's kind of a nice thing now that I've decided to look at it differently. But when I was a teenager, it made me very heavy. by the scale, by the number. And still my number on the scale is a bit higher than most people who only got about 5'4" to work with, but it's because of muscle. So if my only goal is to get the weight down on the scale, I have to engage in a lot of really unhealthy habits in order to have a lower weight. You know, I have to not work out and not move. I have to feed my body less good, less protein so that I don't carry as much. For the listeners that don't know, muscle weighs more than fat. And so all of these pieces, the goal of having a lower number on the scale is actually not in favor of my health. But if I wanted to still be a vain teenager and say I want to have my clothing fit better and I want to be able to be better at sports and keep up with my friends, and it doesn't matter what I weigh, my goal of having my weight on the scale go down actually fails horribly. It goes up 10 pounds, but my pant size goes down too. Because the healthy habits and the goal of being better fitness within my body was what went on the pedestal.
Yes.
The aesthetic can't be the thing.
No, it can't be. And to your point, it's when you failed or not failed, but when someone doesn't achieve what they thought was the right number.
I failed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, for a while. Yeah.
try to stay away from the harsh words sometimes. But yeah, you know, it's, you know, yeah. It's, yeah. Or if you achieve it, sometimes you achieve it instead of along with these other great goals, you achieve it by sacrificing your health. Mm-hmm. And those are now two very different things. When healthy habits are the goal and you achieve the weight loss you want, well, if you did it via those means, your energy probably also went up. Mm-hmm. Your mood probably also improved. You probably became more cognitively efficient, which means you became better at your career or a better student or, you know, whatever life stage you're in. So again, the direction of the approach is so crucial because one, A doesn't always equal B, but it does when healthy habits are A.
Yeah.
You know, when they come first.
And it's true. And then for another person, I have another patient that I'm thinking of that similarly, she made the shift of making healthy habits her goal and her body size didn't change that much, but she felt so much better within that body that she decided that she finally could have that self-love and health at every size kind of moment is, you know, this is where my body is, but now look at what more it can do for me. It took out that self-loathing of, and it's failing me. Now we still have the same body size, but it is strong and her energy and affect and all the things that you just mentioned improved.
Yes. You know, and for the weight loss specific community, and maybe anyone listening who that is the goal, there's something that's hard to explain about that process that happens with time. There's the short-term scale changes and weight changes, appearance changes that are definitely possible with certain tactics. But when you do things in a way that increases your energy and increases your mood, your composition changes in later stages very differently than it changes at beginning stages. But you've got to allow yourself to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And again, this might be hard to explain for someone that hasn't yet experienced this, that is only thinking of, I believe I'm 20 pounds overweight and that's what I want to lose. I understand that. But there is a composition change that comes with the aesthetic that really takes time for your body to get into. And there's an adjustment period that happens later on. Mm-hmm. When you've done healthy things for long enough time, your gut microbiome, your internal processes happen differently to where you sustain muscle better. You sustain physiological things better that present in better emotional terms later on too. So you just can't speak enough to patients and sticking to the healthy habits because there's benefits that are going to come that are just probably, you're probably just unaware of them at the beginning of the process.
Well, and it speaks to that, you know, the iceberg under the surface when we talk about things like dementia, Alzheimer's, where you have that 20 years before you even know that you have symptoms. You know, some of that 20 years is living in your gut microbiome. You know, some forms of dementia are now being called type 3 diabetes, where it's about how we process sugar, how is our food intake, what does our gut microbiome do with all of these pieces. And so living with an unhealthy gut microbiome for all that time, you know, one that sets up for problems long term downstream. But again, this conversation is about motivation at the beginning. So if we want to have more energy next week, that is certainly on the list. If we want our brain to start thinking more clearly, that's going to come as well. with the change of healthy habits, not with the goal of, well, I don't want to get Alzheimer's, or I don't want to have these things. I want to take that aesthetic off of the list.
Yes. And when the goal is just, I don't, like, no one wants to get sick, you know, that, you know, so when that's the goal though, your decision right this second, it doesn't mean as much when you're like, well, I don't want to get this down the line, but if I just have this negative health decision right this second, who cares in the grand scheme of things, which might be true unless we have used that justification day in and day out for long periods of time. Well, now that's no longer a speck on the radar of the health habits you're accumulating. Now that becomes your normal. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to bring self-awareness to this conversation. I think the hardest part for people is sometimes being honest with themselves. Really, where are you? What are your real habits? Not that we lie to ourselves, but sometimes we do. Sometimes there's a subconscious, not with bad intent, little lies that we tell ourselves about, well, things really aren't that bad. Well, of course, because that's more comforting than admitting, you know what, if I keep living the way I am, I might be heading down a bad road. So I run a virtual program, and the first week of the virtual program is called Awareness Week. And during that week, I want people to make no changes, not one, which is a really difficult ask. Because when people join a program like this, they're like, okay, what do I got to do? Nothing. What do you mean nothing? I just paid for your program. I expect like a lot of advice. But the truth is, until you are really honest with yourselves and I see a true glimpse of what you're doing, I don't know. I don't know where to start advice. So, and it'd be irresponsible of me and irresponsible of any fitness or health expert to start giving advice without having some type of glimpse into what the current habits really are.
I love that. And it is so true that everything really does begin with that awareness. We have to take sort of a fearless assessment of ourselves and be willing to say, this works, this doesn't, to know what we want to change. Otherwise, we are once again back to that checklist of what we're just going to add on top of the foundation that may or may not be working. It creates more work and more fatigue in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'll use myself as an example here. You know, I've recently, you know, I'm not what you would, if you looked at me on paper, you would not call me a big drinker. You know, they're long gone are the days of going out with friends and having a number that I don't want to admit amount of drinks. You know, those are probably 10 years away since I've had a night like that. But I've still realized now that I have three kids and, you know, I'm closer to 40 than I am to 30. A drink a night for a few nights in a row, while it doesn't sound like a lot, oh yeah, three glasses of wine in 3 days, I am noticeably less productive. I have more brain fog. My energy, my workouts are not as good that fourth and fifth day. So on paper, not bad. There's a lot of people that have a daily glass of wine. That's not necessarily a bad thing unless you can look into yourself and say, but it might be for me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it is to the rest of the world. What is my living situation doing for me specifically? And because of that, I have to admit, like, as much as I enjoy like a glass of wine, probably more than one night a week, one or two nights a week is probably my limit where I can also accomplish the other goals that if I don't accomplish, my life becomes negative. If I'm not as good of a dad, if I'm not running my business the way I want to, if I'm not doing creative things like my podcast, because that tends to be what goes off my list first when I'm not as productive or don't have as much energy, I get really upset if I don't accomplish those things. So if I'm really honest with myself, I backtrack to say, okay, with my age and as with aging, this is something that is different for me and I can either acknowledge it or I can try to fight it. And fighting it is not, it's an uphill battle that it's just not worth fighting.
It's really not a fun one. I've come to a very similar decision for myself, but it brings up this place where some of these recommendations are based on a general population that may have nothing to do with who you are as an individual. So again, this goes back to that self-awareness and that self-responsibility of saying, well, you know, when I go to the doctor and they ask how much I have to drink, and if I say, you know, 1 to 3 glasses a week, that is right in a healthy range. That is fine. They're not going to say two peeps about it. But if I take a look at me and my own bioindividuality, having recovered from a traumatic brain injury now, I think I'm about 9 months out from that. That's a really bad choice. It's a really bad choice. So I have to have that personal awareness to say, what is the input and what is the output that I am going for? So, you know, it takes a break from that place of, well, if you have brain fog and energy fatigue, I'm going to load you up on all these supplements. You're going to get on CoQ10. We're going to get you on a lot of B vitamins. And the simple thing would have been drink less wine. Yeah. Sometimes hard, depending on how you socially work that into your world. But yes. Do you see how it changes your choice point, I think is what you're getting after.
100%. Yes, that's exactly right. It's how it affects you specifically, not on broad generalities, like you said, are made up for someone that may or may not been anywhere close to you. I recently had a podcast episode with a brilliant woman who started her own supplement line made specifically for females, because what she found out in her research was almost every supplement in the world was based off of an average weighted male. And then instead of formulating that to female hormones and size, they just said, okay, well then females would just have less. Well, that's not even close to an appropriate adjustment that makes sense. Now, I mean, it's not even, again, not even close. So, but without that awareness of the science of it, realizing who they are, who the generalities are made for, you probably would never make the appropriate change for yourself.
But it's still, to that point, really tempting to stick with the they. Because yes. It does have this really alluring get out of jail free card of, well, they say I can do it.
Yes.
How do we get out of that loop?
It's a great question, because you're right. There's comfort in numbers, right? There's and there's comfort in negatives too. When everyone is sharing the same negatives as me, I'm not alone. So it makes it okay. It makes it okay to do. So I think that's a very good question. And I think the start of it has to be what you do solo. I think it has to be creating an actual process for yourself. And this is hard. Again, I'll admit that up front. I created a rating system that I have members use. It's five categories. It's a rating scale of 1 to 5. And again, I try to ask them to do it without judgment or without emotion or without logic at first. It's just a yes or no. 1 to 5, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Did you have the amount of energy you thought you should have today? Did you do this? Did you do that? And at the end of it, the numbers just kind of are what they are. And when you do that, it makes it individual. It makes it you. And I think that's what people have to do. We have to, while I understand finding comfort in numbers, we have to find a way to individualize things for ourselves. I think that's one. And then number two, you know, this might be not be the best direct answer, but it's another thought in my head of, We have to be less reactive in life. We have to live less of, I'm just going to take things on as they come to me. My wife makes fun of me often about how much of I'm an overthinker. Like I'm just a very aware person now, because I've practiced this of, what do I have to do in 3 days? Well, that means today I better eat well because I have this podcast 3 days and I want to be sharp for it. And it's just not the way that many people think. But if we look at our month ahead, and the holidays are a good example of, hey, I've got 8 events from Thanksgiving through New Year's, 8 events. If I want to eat whatever I want at those events and drink whatever I want at those events, and I just do it on those 8 days, I'm probably going to be just fine. I'm probably going to enjoy them guilt-free. I'm probably going to see any health issues or aesthetic issues or lack of results. And if I circle those in a calendar and I just really make sure that the other days become absolute must good health decision days, well, it's done two things, right? It sets you up for success, but it's also set your mental expectations up. I'm saying no today because in 48 hours, I'm going to say a lot of yes. Yeah. So I think that's the second part, is not living reactively and trying to get out of our emotional brain, because our emotional brain is really good at justifying. Really good.
Oh, so good. So good. And there's one word that I didn't hear in that example that I love that you omitted. And it's taking the idea of, well, I'm going to let those days be my cheat days. It's setting up this false dichotomy between, you know, being overly attentive to the must have good health decisions and saying I am not taking care of myself when I'm going to say yes to those drinks during the holiday parties. But instead, what you set up was a spectrum of how we want to care for our bodies. and how we want to care for ourselves. Because if those holiday parties are about socializing and they're about celebrating, or it's a wedding and toasting the happy couple, or you are the happy couple and you want to be toasted a lot, that is mental, emotional health. And abstaining from that is, or indulging in that is not a cheat. It is another aspect of health.
Yes. Well, I'm so glad you said that, because I could not agree more. There are health benefits that come from your indulgences, your things that you think of as negatives, but you're going to do them anyway. There are benefits. They just come in the right ratios. And, I really like that word more than balance. I've really, I don't want to say don't like, but I've come to the point where I think balance is misunderstood and it's misinterpreted, where we think balance is an even seesaw. Well, if we look at balance that way, most of us are going to fail. But if we look at it as a ratio game, I just have to have my ratios right. I think the approach becomes different. So I think once we look at it that way, you know, both, like you just said, we start looking at recovery, off days, indulgent days differently. We look at them better, but we start looking at life more like a puzzle piece than as this constantly reactive, fluctuating bowl of water. that as you're carrying it, it's just constantly moving and you're just reacting as it moves, trying your best not to spill it. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Oh, I love that. And ratio is such a good word, because it, to me, it brings in this idea of dosing, that we need a little bit, and that anything in the wrong dose and the wrong ratio is not going to be good. You know, we can even think about athletes who are at the top of their field, but in order to do so are doing what is honestly overtraining. And their gut microbiome is under as much damage and risk as the person who overdoses on recovery days and indulgent foods.
Yes.
One of these we have deemed to be a healthy habit, but it is at the extreme of that healthy habit. We have written off rest and recovery. We don't do that here in America. So overindulging in it is exceptionally bad. But the truth of it is finding some ratio that exists somewhere in the middle for you as an individual.
Yeah, your extremism is not good in any direction. It's just easier to be extreme on the couch than it is to be extreme in the gym. But that doesn't make the other extreme any more healthy, to your point. None whatsoever. You're right. You can find good examples of extremists in the wrong direction in any category. You know, technically speaking, you could eat too much of any certain vitamin and get a negative health effect from it. Mm-hmm. It might be more rare, but it doesn't make it not the same conversation. So that's a good example. And I think athletes are a good example in general too. Even if we go back to the cheat game or the cheat day usage, you know, I would say good coaches have stopped using exercise as a form of punishment too. Why? Because it creates this negative relationship. If, well, you were late, so you're going to run extra. Well, running is what gets me better. But now you told me that it's a punishment tool, something I shouldn't want to do. And that should be my motivation to not be late for practice next time. I think we've used food in a very similar way, where it's become this escape from our real life, or the escape from these things I have to do, which now makes that the fun part and the, oh no, you told me I can't have it, so now I want it more part. And it made the healthy choices the enemy. You're something I have to do, not something that I want to do. So a lot of this is perspective. It's flipping our perspective on the choices that we have.
Yeah. And I like that approach on the perspective then too, because it adds that emotional component to food, which, as we all know, that if changing our diet was just as simple as saying, eat this, not that, the whole diet industry would have fallen apart. But it clearly it hasn't. It has so much more of that emotional component to it, because then that also creates the negative feedback loop that if this pizza from the best pizza shop on Pearl Street, and it's this little mom and pop place, and I just look forward to eating it, but that's a cheat day, or that's not something I should have. And I'm at a neighborhood birthday party, and that is stacked, piled high, and I'm hanging out with my friends and we're all enjoying pizza, and I'm going to be racked with guilt about it. I have enjoyed nothing.
Nothing.
And so it's negative. The negative impact on the health comes from the perspective of how we are doing it, not the fact that we are doing it.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you look at it that way, it's really not too unbelievable to see why we are reaching for such easy dopamine fixes, because we actually took them away from ourselves. Even though what should have been fun party became a negative. And now the day after, we feel bad, so we ate the way we did, so we feel bad again. And then we have to come off of that, so we feel bad again. So now we're going right back to aiming for quick fixes. whether mm-hmm. the alcohol or food or TV binging or, you know, whatever it might be, we go right back to that. And we wonder why, but really we've kind of created our own hole when it comes to that.
And there's that image, that great image of trying to carry this bowl where you're just overcorrecting, sloshing.
Yes.
Instead of slowing down, doing nothing for a week. Oh, what a great piece of advice to do nothing for a week, but develop some self-awareness of what holds you keep stepping in that makes your bowl slosh off to the left like that.
Yes.
Maybe we don't step in that hole.
Yeah. And how do you feel? Really, how mm-hmm. do you feel? And then it's one of my favorite parts about a process is when someone does successfully start implementing some new habits and they discover a new good, a new normal. Where, you know, I think people have to become aware that if you think you feel good, maybe you do, but maybe you just feel you're normal and you don't have anything to compare it to. Well, now after a week or two of some really good decisions, you're like, oh my God, this is good energy. And sometimes you don't realize that still until you revert back. Mm-hmm. I've had 2 weeks of really good, healthy decisions. I worked out more than I had before. And then I had 3 really bad negative days. Holy crap, I feel terrible. Was this what I was feeling all the time before? Probably. You just, again, didn't have the perspective to be able to compare it to anything else yet.
And then I think those days, I kind of celebrate my patients when they come in and have those days, because I think those reverting days are so important. I call those the bad days, good data days, because it reinforces your choices. It reinforces where you want to go. It flips that script again from the global day of, you know, asking someone how many, and I've heard this answer more than one time, how many headaches do you have? You know, do you get headaches? And I say, oh, the normal amount. What's the normal amount of headache? Because I'm going with 0. And we have accepted that there is a normal amount of fatigue, a normal amount of insomnia, a normal amount of headache. And if you realize that you in pain, if you realize you don't have to do that for a couple of weeks, and then you make choices that bring it back upon you, we are starting to divorce ourselves from this is normal or more, this is behavioral.
Yes. I had to laugh because I want to admit that I gave in to the trends and started a TikTok account. Which is actually more fun than
I won't judge you for that.
I fought it for a long time, and now I'm actually having fun with it. And there's actually some really good accounts. It's no longer just for the too young. But there was a post about that. There was a post, you know, like, you know, how much pain are you experiencing? Well, the normal amount. I'm like, well, the normal amount is 0. You know, and then I actually had a flush of comments of, well, that's not true, or like, well, no, it is, you know, it might be your new normal, but pain is still something that is supposed to tell us that something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you've gotten to the point where unfortunately it's become a part of your life, but ideally that should not be the norm.
Yeah. And even when we have conditions that exist within the chronic world and still seeking our way out of it, we've had conversations with individuals with chronic dystonias or autoimmune disorders. And yes, there is a level of chronic pain. And perhaps there is a bit of a normal or best hope for this condition.
Sure.
That is still with the acknowledgement of within a condition and needing to work within that realm to change those symptoms. It changes the playing field, but not the opportunity to at least work towards better. Yes. And so just kind of gently being acknowledging of that world, but
yes,
throwing in the towel is still not the answer.
No, it's not. And thank you for saying that, because you're right. I definitely don't mean to be insensitive to people that have real issues that are not mm-hmm. necessarily an easy fix. Mm-hmm. But to your point, they have real issues. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still something that comes along with those sensations. But no, thank you. I appreciate those situations very much.
Yeah. And it's something that I've been trying to work on as well, you know, that we have a huge drive towards being without. And I'm realizing, you know, within myself, my own personal health journey, is that it is really easy to set that site, kind of what we talk about with the overtraining and the extreme on the far side. Again, the hard part is to find that middle ground for you, where you can have the best constellation of health and symptoms available to you bio-individually by the healthcare choices that you can make without going overboard, driving yourself crazy one way or another. Yes. Not an easy task, to borrow your phrase.
No, not at all. And, you know, I've said the word capacity a lot lately, you know, talking about mm-hmm. being aware of what your capacity is. You know, I've learned I'm very passionate about my business ownership. I'm very passionate about me being a father and a husband. You know, so those two things really take up most of my natural attention, which is good. That's a good thing, right? But I've really found that when I try to fit too much in outside of those two realms, it usually brings me more stress than happiness. Even though on paper, the things that I'm probably saying no to now, theoretically do, you know, seeing friends more often. Well, yeah, I love seeing my friends more often. Trying to schedule so much of that time in has become a stress point for me more than a happy point. So, you know, if we throw another, you know, another wrench into the equation, you know, I think sometimes learning how to say no to certain things that we probably genuinely do wish we could say yes to, that might be a topic for a different day, but it's another hard thing to really become good at and practice that.
But it comes right back to your original point about having that self-awareness and not having that knee-jerk reaction of in the moment, the glass of wine for dinner sure feels good for dinner with dinner, or in the moment, making sure that my calendar is stacked with my friends sure feels good. But at the end of that week of social outings or at that end of the week of a glass of wine with dinner every night, what is my end payout? Do I feel good? Or now do my overreact, you know, overcorrecting and going into hermit mode and a liver detox cleanse for, you know, all the wine, can we find that happy medium and find the ratio, find the homeostasis that keeps us from sloshing that water everywhere? I love that metaphor.
Yes. Yeah. And once you do, you really do find this level of peace that it's, you can't explain it till you find it, but it's a really happy place and a place full of results. That's the best part.
And easier to maintain once we have had that habits on the pedestal.
Yes.
Now we're not white knuckling our way through a should-do list, but this is how I live. I like it here.
Yeah. Easier to maintain, easier to get back to. You know, when that is your norm, you get back to it quicker. You know, you see people that have, you know, these, they'll go on vacation and they come back and it takes them weeks to get back to the gym or weeks to get back to routines. Well, that's because the pedestal was probably misaligned.
But the routine that they are getting back to perhaps is the long hours at the office, not taking breaks, not drinking water, because what is on the pedestal is that need to perform, that need to have the optics at work, whatever it is for you. We do what is important to us.
Yes. What was important and a combination of that and sometimes obligated. And that's sometimes those get muddied for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, wonderful. Well, Mike, thank you so much for bringing in such a wonderfully nuanced conversation about this seemingly innocuous frame shift around what we put on the pedestal, if it's the habits or the goals. And the self-awareness that it takes to really find that nuance for yourself. You know, if you think that it is weight loss that is your goal, what are you really asking for out of yourself? What is that weight loss going to give you? What habit are you looking for and looking to sustain? So just really wonderful nuggets to start kind of playing around with. And if any of our listeners want to learn more about you or find your virtual programs, where can they do that?
Yeah, you know, my website is probably the place to start. It's www.marhealthandperformance.com. I know it's long and I apologize for it. In hindsight, I should have changed that. But also our Instagram will lead you everywhere. And that same thing at Mar Health and Performance.
Wonderful. So we'll have those links in the show notes as well. Absolutely check out Mike's work. A lot of really great ways to start to dive in and find out what's important to you and how are you going to get there outside of these big tenuous goals that just seem absolutely unachievable. So Mike, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was great.
Beautiful. And to all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. I hope there was a new idea that you can pick up and start turning around. Maybe do nothing for this week and take a look at what you're really looking for, how you're really doing, develop some of that self-awareness. Check in with us next week. Let us know how you're doing. In the meantime, be well.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it to help you on your journey to health. Please, if you're inclined, share this podcast with a friend so we can help more people lead healthier lives. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help. And we'll see you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. Be well.